everybody. I'm so excited to introduce you to Jarden, a really creative person who I choose to invite to Melanine Talk and who is gonna really explain a lot. So make sure you do get comfortable and you do get your tea, because I forgot, and you enjoy listening this episode with Jarden.
I'm so happy to hear your voice.
Dude, finally.
Yeah, finally. It's a new thing for me. You know, I didn't know this app, so I'm very excited. And I did listen to your previous podcast, and especially the one where you were talking about your process through doing podcasts and how you discovered the app. So, you know, it's cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, like when I record those things, I actually don't believe people actually listen. So when people listen, I'm like, oh my God.
A little bit. And at the same time, we have conversations about a lot of things. And, you know, I want to introduce people to my friends. And yeah, so it's cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, okay. I need to definitely come over. I mean, not everybody smoke, right? Or drink.
Not everybody, no. You don't have to. You don't have to. You
don't have to. Like,
yeah. It's just
you
a vibe. Yeah, you can if you want.
Yeah. That sounds really cool. So, what is it called again? Puff Puff?
Puff Puff Talk with Jarden. Right?
With Jarden.
Puff Puff Talk with Jarden. And it's going to be on my website, which is going to be revealed tonight as well. I mean, tonight, night of the recording. So, by the time out, the website will be already out, and not the podcast, the website, I said, I'm sorry. So I'm stressed about that too, you know, because it's going to be another platform for me. I wanted to have a website to kind of make it like a central place where you can find all the things I've done, all the things I'm doing, you know, because people don't really know exactly. Some of the people don't know me personally, you know.
Yes, you do like a lot. I noticed that.
Yeah,
very artful, and you do a lot. So
I do a lot. Yeah.
If you want, you can talk about that. Like, what do you do? And yeah,
of course. So you want me to do it now?
If you want, I mean, no, you don't have to do that. Later. But since we're already talking about it, I'm like,
all right, so maybe, you know, if you're gonna use this, my name is Jarden. My name is Jarden as an artist name, but my real name, birth name, is Jarden. And basically, Jarden is just the Hebrew origin of my name. The funny story about it is that the reason I found it is because when you search for the name Jarden and my family name, which is a common name in the region, in the country Jarden, what you find is hotels, you know, middle school, high school, your friend gives you so much names. And for the people who don't know, I was born in French Guiana, South America, but I grew up in the Caribbean. And it was the, you know, the moment of all those Jamaican sounding, you know, names, you know, that we were calling ourselves.
So
my name actually was Kenja. You know, Kenja was my name given to me by my friends. And then it evolved into Jarden Kenja, and now it's only Jarden. So
well, you have like a whole history about your name. That's
A whole history. Everything about me is a whole history. I could talk for hours. You have to stop me, by the way, if you think I'm talking too much.
No, that's actually great.
You know,
it's gonna be like the longest episode, but this is a good.
Yeah, it's a great start. I'm so excited about it. So yeah, but you know, basically that's, I guess, why I do a podcast, because I have a lot to I talk a lot, so let's make it useful, you know. and I also wanted to introduce, you know, interesting people, you know, to that I have around me, because I surrounded myself by good energy, artistic people, and you know, from different works of life or whatever walks of life. And I wanted to introduce them to my Instagram friends, let's say, you know, if we use that term. And so
there's still young people who have
a lot to say, who can relate to the things that we say. And that's why I think like podcasting is really coming up. I'm so glad that a lot of people are starting this actually, because it connects, and that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's important also, you know, to feel that there's people out there that live the same thing you do, you know, even if they don't have the same culture, the same name, they don't live in the same country. And that's what the internet is for. So sharing is important. And I love to share. I love to learn from people. You know, I love to get inspired and inspire others. So basically, podcast is a great way. And I was thinking, all right, let's do this, you know. So, you know, I've been working on it for a long time now. You know, it's been a couple months. I've recorded a couple shows already, just to make sure that I was sure about this is what I want to do, you know. And just not just jump into it and maybe after that I'm like, okay, two episodes and I'm done. So and I really get better at, you know, asking questions and stuff, you know, listening and you know, also, you know, anticipating what the people listening will want to know about the person that I'm talking to, especially since it's not a video, you know. So you know what I mean, and everything has to be vibrant and living, you know, with your voice. And that's an art, basically. So
it's a form of art, because people have to like imagine and use their mouth a lot to like
exactly. So podcasting, we have that in common. That's the first thing I can say that I do. But I do a lot of other things. I sing, I write. I started first by writing, you know, music, text. Mm-hmm. First of all, it was more poetry and then novels. And I got into music because I love music. And at some point, I just realized, I guess, that I could sing. I don't know if I can say it like that. Like, it just happened to me that I realized, oh, well, I guess I can sing.
There's something going on here.
You know, let's just get into this. So
yes,
I gave it a chance, and now it's kind of like my main thing right now, because I'm working a lot on it. You know, I found a producer. He's young. He's my age. He's he lives on across the ocean, you know, in Israel, you know.
What? And, you found one in Israel?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I met him at Afropunk, just like you. I met him at Afropunk. He was there to see the Caesar concert, you know, the first day. Actually, well, guess what? You met him too. Because, you know, when you found me, the second Afropunk, we saw each other.
Yeah.
I was with him at that moment. That's crazy. Oh, wow.
Wow. I didn't even notice.
yeah. But actually, that was the first night we even met. We didn't really have the time to talk about music back then, but you know, it happened in a certain way. You know, sometimes the universe has a way of, you know, making things happen that you can't control, and it's fascinating, you know. I was in a phase in my life where I was, you know, because at first, like, I'm a law student, you know. That's why I left the Caribbean to after I turned 18 to do a university in Paris, a law school. And as much as I love law, and you know, I've had great experiences, I've worked at the French Parliament and, you know, law firms and stuff, but I realized I have this creative, I've always had this like double thing about myself, where there would be Jordan, you know, the serious guy, and there would be Yarden, the artist. And I felt like deep inside, Yarden was suffocating because he couldn't express himself anymore, you know. I was doing too much thing. I was doing sports. I've been a sportsman, you know, fencing for years. I've done, you know, like competition outside of France, you know, with the national selection. I've done French competition. I mean, I've done a lot of things. So at some point, Yarden was like, I need to come out and be an artist, you know. And so since, you know, it's like I'm at the end of my studies right now, and I was thinking I could take a year off to prepare the bar exam, and it would be a great excuse to at the same time do other things, you know, creative things, and let Yarden express itself, you know. And that's what I did. So it was a great moment, and you know, it was a thought process, and by the time Afropunk happened, I was not decided yet. And you know, there was this thing inside of me where I was like, you know, I love SZA and I want to meet her. So yeah. I did my best to go to backstage and I found a way to get backstage, although I didn't have no reason to be backstage.
No, you didn't come.
I did. Actually, I don't know if I should say it out loud, but you know, I came in backstage by a security exit, you know, like that's how I got backstage. I was watching how they was going backstage, and I was like, I'm going backstage, I'm gonna meet SZA, basically. You know, and
yeah, also, I think I remember you showing me the picture that you saw her, and I was like freaking out.
Yeah.
Remember that.
Yeah. And you know, the excuse I had is because the girl who was moderating the thing, you know, the DJ, I guess, she, you know, the girl, she was talking, and her name is Okaya Diallo, and I know her from a previous life of mine where I was, you know, invested in all black things, and I was president of a club for black people in my university, stuff that I created. And she's a militant, she's an Afro militant, she's a journalist, so we met her a couple times, and I know her, you know, personally. We talk sometimes on Twitter, and I was like, are you backstage, can I come backstage to see you so you can introduce me to SZA? She didn't reply. So when I got backstage and people were asking me what I was doing here, I said, I'm going to see Rukaya, you know, I know her. And that's how I got backstage. And long story short, SZA didn't come out. I was like, fuck. So I got outside and I saw a car waiting, and like a big Mercedes Benz truck. And I was like, oof, this is for SZA. And, you know, like, I just saw like two other people, you know, they looked white, you know, and they were like waiting too. I was like, I don't know what they're waiting for, but I guess it's the same thing as me. So at some point I even gave up because I saw the car left, and I asked to a security dude, and he said, well, they're going to pick up the SZA band and group another place. So I was like, there you go, I got fucked, you know, this was a setup. So I left. And then I came, I was like, let me just come back. And all of a sudden, I come back.
Not me.
I was like, no, you know what? If I have, and I, like, to be truly honest, like, I'm a crazy stan, I guess. I guess you can put me in the category, you know, with the Nicki Minaj fan and the Beyonce. Because yep. I was like, I stood there for like maybe 2 hours and a half.
Oh, wow.
I came back. And when I came back, guess what happens? The car pulls back up. And SZA comes out. And I was like, no way. No fucking way. And the crazy thing is, I at that moment, I was working on a project that's like, which is supposed to be, I guess, the theme of today. It's like a response, but not in a response way, but more like a mirror to what SZA's control was for women, you know?
Yes.
I wanted to express what it felt like, I guess, being a man and love relationship in the black community, in black love and all those things.
Yeah.
From my perspective, and because I realized we both do the same thing and both are unhappy, you know, it's like unhealthy relationships that would be between black people. And I was like, let me just express what I feel. And I wanted to call this alt, since, you know, she did control. I wanted to do alt, you know, a very nerdy thing. But you know, I didn't have a producer, so I didn't find a lot of instrumentals that was free of rights, and I couldn't do nothing. So when I met her, I was so pissed because I didn't have the project.
Actually, this is a great story. You staying there until you find SZA, because it's just like teaches people never give up. If you want something, go after that. Like,
go after that. Yeah, and perseverance. You know, that's actually when I was doing sport, fencing, that's what fencing taught me. One of the things it taught me is persevere, never give up. So I was like, all right, it's cold outside. You know, I was calling some of my friends and my mom, and I was like, you know what? It's the same story, just a short story about, you know, me and my friend going to the KFC, and we pull up and the KFC is closed. And he's like, nah, let's just go home. And I'm like, nah, like, look at them. They still have some stuff. Like, let's just try to beg. And like, I'm not begging and stuff. And at some point, there was a girl, like a black girl, you know, and she saw us. She's like, which one of my brothers? And I said, I want some chicken wings. And she said, all right. And she gave it us. She gave us, like, the rest of the chicken wing they had for free. I was like, whoop, man, You know, like, I guess that's very black to be excited about a KFC bucket of chicken wings for free. But it was so cool. It was just like, to be like, you see, when you don't give up, it's stupid because it's for food, but for anything in life, you should give up, you know? Right? So, see that comes out, and I'm freaking out. I can't even talk. I'm like, and so I say to her, you know, like, I really love you. You're an inspiration of mine. Like, the way you express things, you're very poetic, very artistic, and like philosophical. And I said to her that I was writing something that was kind of like a mirror to what she's done. And it was the perspective of men. And she was like, oh, is it out yet? Where can I listen to it? And I was like, fuck, shit, damn. Because it was not ready. I didn't have the instrumentals for that. But all the texts were ready. And I was so thinking about that so much that I didn't even think about showing her because I had another song that I've done with a friend that was in my phone, and I didn't even
think about that.
And then I was like, anyway, but then he came, this white looking dude and his friend, and they came and they were like, oh, Caesar. So I was like, okay. As I told you, at the time I was not sure about doing this year of thing. So when September came around, I was like, I need to do it now. Like, this is now or never. Like, the stars are aligning, and I'm going to be dumb if I don't just go for it, you know?
Yes. And but is there any tips you would give, like, young creative artists that are not able to do this jump and say, okay, I'm going to do it now? Like, what did you do to get motivated and say, okay, I'm going to do my studies, but still go after my passion and what I like?
I'll say two things. First of all, don't be afraid of the outcome. If I take my example, I'm nowhere near being a signed artist or anything. You know what I mean? And it might not happen, but it might happen too. You know, there's a possibility. It's 50-50. If you don't take the chance, you'll never know, first of all. And then it goes with the second thing I'm going to say is, it's better to regret having done something than regret not having doing it, you know? It's like, I'd rather be curious, take a chance, have an experience, and regret doing it, then be like, man, all my life I should have done it. Especially when you are an artist, it's something that's inside of you that you need to do to live, to express.
So, yeah,
exactly. So if you suppress this feeling, then you're going to regret it your whole life. And I was like, I cannot. And you know, when you have this feeling of I'm like I deserve the best, then go for it. Whatever it is that you do, is it like painting, singing, you know, just go out there in the world and take chances, because they exist. And when you put this good energy outside, like, the universe give it back to you. I've came to these realizations. And so, yeah, just go. You only live once, so just go.
YOLO.
YOLO, for real.
For real. Yeah, that's true, definitely.
Yeah. You know, it's so much things that are yet to be done in this world, you know? It amazes me how so many artists have came and gone, and so many people have created things, and we still are able to create new things, right? So you could be the next one to create whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can create whatever. It's true.
Exactly. You know, do you think nobody was thinking, like, in their wildest dreams that we would have the internet in the Middle East? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just have to think out of the box and just go
go for it. Yes.
You know, and one thing I want to say, especially to people who are, I guess, good students, they go to school, university, and they have also this social pressure of, you're a good student, so you have to get a diploma and have a serious job, and your parents too sometimes, because I've been through that. At some point, even your family and your entourage is going to see that you're in pain because you're not good. Even if you do good at school, you do good at university, but like, they're going to see that it's like a weight on your shoulder, and you gotta go for what you want to go to. Because now my mom, who was the one that first wanted me to go do law school instead of photography in Paris, because I've always hesitated between the two. And she was like, you wanted to be a lawyer since you was like a kid, and now you're going to talk about you wanted to photography, although you have this inside of you, but keep this as a passion. You know, I thank her for that, because now I have my diploma, I can do whatever I want to do. Hopefully in September I'll be a lawyer, but still, you know, I had this burning desire inside of me. You have to go and follow it. It was, you know, I used to use that joke to say that I need to do like a coming out as an artist. You know, everybody knows me as Jordan, like the dude from law school, the president of this black association, this black club, this very political person and stuff. I need to introduce them to who I am inside, which is also Jordan the artist, right?
Yeah. And
that's the jump. Don't be afraid to do a coming out, you know, like just do this sometimes.
Yeah, because I noticed there are a lot of students who suffer under like depression because of all of that, because of that pressure that they get from outside, from their families.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have something in them that they cannot express, or maybe they do not even want to study what they're studying right now, but they're still gonna do it. So a lot of them are just like dying slowly inside.
True, exactly. And it's not good for yourself. It's something that I used to say to all the people in my club. My university is a very historical, aristocratic law school. So there's not a lot of black people in here, you know? And not only that, but there was nothing for us and nothing by us. That's why I created this safe space. But I said to the people in my group, in my team and the club and stuff, I said, you know what? You don't have to be like a militant all the time. You can be yourself too. And it's the same thing I say to good law students. Like, you don't have to be the best student all the time. You can just go out there, drink some beers, have fun, go see an exhibition of, like, I don't know, any painter or artist you like. You know, create yourself too. I love when, you know, I hear people, I mean, I don't like to hear people say to themselves, oh, you paint, you do this, you do that, and I cannot. I say, no, try it. And then what I love is when I take their hand and I'm like, all right, tomorrow you're going to paint with me. And then they enjoy it, you know? And
But a lot of people, I mean, I think it's because society also teaches us to only do one thing, focus on one thing. I've heard it so many times. People say, oh, you do this. Why? Just focus on one thing and do this, and, you know, concentrate on that. And it's like, why can people not do many things and enjoy it and be good at it? Like,
exactly.
I think we need to go away from that and actually allow young people, old people, whoever, to do multiply things, because we're not just, we don't only have this one skill. We have like different kind of skills. And it's like in kindergarten, we teach them to use all these skills. But then when they grow up, we're like, no, focus on only one thing, one skill. So.
True. And in the world we live in, you know, where you can travel everywhere, there's the internet where you see what's good outside of your little environment. It's good to go outside, like physically and mentally, like go outside of every box you're in, your French, just go outside, just like you. Like, I commend you for like living Germany to go to the US after school, after university, to be like, all right, you know what, let me just go and try, you know. It's about this at the end of the day, you know, the world is big and there's only one word and we only have one life. So just do whatever you want to do. Do it and be whoever you want to be too. You know, be faithful and truthful to yourself. Just don't run away from who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
First of all, we have to like find out who we are.
True. But, you know, you find out through experiences, you know?
Exactly. That's also true. Like, you have to try and go, like you already said, out of the box a lot to know what you want, what you don't want, and to, like, get closer to yourself.
Exactly. Totally. That's very important, you know? Sometimes people feel also like if you try something that's not necessarily conventional, it's going to be, like, you're going to diminish who you are in your unicity, or like your own. No, you just, you know, you think about things that you do like food. Each time you try new food, you feed yourself. It's the same thing. Each time you try a new idea, each time you try a new country to travel to, a new, I don't know, person to talk to, you feed yourself with good energy, knowledge, new things, and that will just reinforce who you are, you know? Even if this thing that you did was a bad experience, as I said, it's better to try and regret it afterwards than regret not doing it, because at least you know that's not you, or that's not what you want, or that's not the type of person that you need around you. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just do it.
And then when you went through that, you were even more grateful for the things you've never seen like around you that were always there and were always like helping you. Then you pointed out more and more grateful for those things. So actually, you never really lose if you think of that.
Totally, totally. You never lose. Never. You lose if you don't. If you don't do, you know. So yeah, it's important, you know. I travel miles away from, you know, my safe space, you know, we can put that into brackets, but still, you know, I'll elaborate another day, I guess, you know, the Caribbean, and I just felt like it was time for me to go out. It was time for me to go outside, to go to Paris, to discover new things, and I'm very fulfilled. You know, the capital hasn't disappointed me yet, you know, because I keep meeting new people. I keep, you know, visiting new things and discovering new things. And, you know, I guess at some point, just like when I grew up in Guadeloupe for like, 15 years of my life. And then you're like, I've done pretty much everything. I guess I'm going to travel again and go to another place, you know. And the world right now gives you the ability to do that. Like, you don't have to work like in one country. Mm-hmm. You can travel. You can do whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wanted to touch up on the thing we was talking about, safe spaces. I think that's really interesting, especially for people of color in Europe. I personally think that there's not
Amazonia, and I grew up in the Caribbean. Those are French territories, you know. So I still, but and so, you know, I get like the European society as a whole is not very, I guess, warm to minorities in general, right?
And
the issue is this, like, nobody should ever be as isolated in their own depression or own pain or own questionings about who they are as well, whatever it is that it is, even if it's like being LGBTQ, being Black, all those things, because when you're a minority, you have all those questions about who am I, you know? But the thing is, it's not a responsibility for the person not to isolate themselves, but because that's human, that's natural. It's a responsibility for their community to provide something for them. And if you think about the European, what I call the Afropean people, our history is, I guess, more recent when it comes to being organized. Whereas in the US, they have everything for their own and their community, because they've been fighting the struggle for a long time, right?
Yes.
And so I guess it's starting to happen right now, thanks to Black militant in the US and thanks to the internet, because now, first of all, we can put words into some things that's happening to us. If you think about it, I don't care what country you are from in Europe, when you want to describe the discrimination that's happening to you as a Black person, we generally use American terms, you know what I mean?
Like
white fears, you know, white privilege and those things.
True.
Because and they provide us those tools that we want to use and that we are going to use now. And I believe it's the responsibility of our generation, because also maybe not our parents, but our grandparents wanted to fit in, I guess, you know? Then our parents was just in the middle, and now we got the internet, we got the friends, we got everything, and the tools is for us to really act, to really take actions. And I believe it's an individual thing. You got to understand as a Black person that everything you do is political. Even combing your hair, like having your natural hair, is political, because in this climate, in this world, everything about you is not totally fully accepted all the time. And so when you have this responsibility of being who you are by nature and by birth, you cannot run away from it if you believe that there's something that you can do that another one from your community can't. And so I've always knew that I had, I guess, this, you know, way about myself, when I, how I speak, how I can organize things and stuff, where I could be kind of like a representative to my own. And so I didn't run away from it when my time was, okay, you got to create this club for your people in your university, because if it's not you, although it would be comfortable not to do it by myself, to do it myself, but if it's not you who are going to bring all the Black people from your university together and create this thing, it's not gonna happen. So I really mm-hmm. I did it. And I believe each one of us, if we feel like, you know, there's someone that's not as established as you, or they, at the moment that you see them, they are weaker, because it's human to be weak and it's normal to be weak. You gotta accept to be weak too. But at that moment, that person's weaker than you. You gotta help them. Like, that's your responsibility as a Black person. I do believe that. And also, what I like with our new work right now is that we realize that we are almost like one people in Europe, the Black people. Because when I meet you, when I meet other people, whoever there is, and wherever we are, we all look at each other like, you're my Black brother, you're my Black sister. You know what I mean? What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we share the same struggle. It's not that I'm French and that you're German or whatever. Like, we share the same shit. We go through the same shit. So, and it's so cool because there's this solidarity thing, and now you got Afropunk in Paris, in London. You know what I mean? That's so cool. So cool. Places where we can exist and be ourselves unapologetically. That's why I love the term Afro-punk, because you're Black, but it's like punk rock. It's like punk in an attitude of, I'm going to be whoever I want to be like. I'm going to be a rebel, you know?
Yeah.
So, create those safe spaces for the people that's around you if you feel like you can. You know, like, don't hesitate. Same thing. Just go. Do this. Don't hesitate, really. Because it's important to feel like, you know, we only have one life, and if you believe in God, that, you know, you will have a, or whatever, you can believe in destiny, universe, whatever, like, you have one goal, one mean here on Earth, like, that's what you were meant to be, then don't run away from it, like, just be it fully, you know? Yeah.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that. That was just like, I'm going to let that sink in for a minute. Like,
how? Like, every time I go into this long, you know, speech, I'm like, oh my God, did I talk too much? Like, is she dead? Like, is she asleep?
No, I forgot to, like, bring my tea and just, like, chill and listen.
Thanks. It feels good, but
that's great. Like, I've honestly never had someone who, like, naturally just flowing and talking. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Because then it's interesting for the listeners. You know, everything that you said is what we need. Actually, it's so
true.
So even I'm like, oh wow. Like I said, I need to let that sink in because
you
can just rush over and it's like, okay, next, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because you were talking about safe spaces. You do that too. I hope you realize it. With your podcast, what you do is create a safe space for us to even come and talk, just like I'm doing, you know? It's important that we can express ourselves and hear ourselves too. This is an example of how you can do something, you know, for your own, you know? So I thank you for that. Really, I do. Thank you. It happens here too, you know. Sometimes it saddens me because I'm like I hope they would realize, you know, or see some things, but you gotta let people see for themselves. And if they're not part of the, you know, it don't matter, as long as, you know, if they're happy, I guess, you know, I hope they're really happy.
I think so. It does make life easier if you choose to not see those
things. Yeah.
You know,
true.
You're like,
true.
There's no racism. No, that doesn't.
Yeah.
If you live like that, it does make things easier. Like,
true.
I
after the H&M debacle, you know, with the monkey and the kid, terrible. Yeah. I remember I saw a tweet from someone who said, "Ugh, it's exhausting being black." And I'm like, oh, so true. I feel you, because it's like you keep like seeing, like when you really care and when you really see things,
yes,
you keep being exhausted and like it's exhausting. It's true. So that's why I'm like, I don't even like, I understand some people don't see things, or that they don't want to see things. And even for the people who are militant, as I said, you don't have to be militant all the time. Sometimes you can just, even if you hear something that's like slightly debatable, sometimes you can, you know, if you don't have the energy, you don't feel like it, just let it slide and, you know, move past that, because you need to preserve yourself. And, you know, self-care and mental health is very important.
It's important,
you
know? Yeah.
So this world already oppresses you in so many ways. You don't want to oppress yourself too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
How do you feel about the mental health and self-care of black men? Because I mean, me as a female, I do not hear a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Which is a little bit sad, because like you said, it's important for everybody. But I see a lot of females, you know, they express that they're doing like yoga and they're like women's meetings, all of that. But I've never really heard of men doing that, especially not in Europe. You know, in America, I've heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you say that, because we are touching on a subject that's very dear to my heart. Is as you know, a black man in the Caribbean, so I'm directly a descendant of the slaves. There is some things in ourselves that, you know, I see sometimes also in African-American black male, you know, or the African-American community as a whole, where like, I guess from whatever, it's from not water, from all the things that have happened, you know, we have to be stronger, you know, stronger as in opposition of stronger than a human person could be, you know, like you have to not show things, you have to not be sometimes things, and it's like you don't have to show any signs of weakness. I'm not a historian or whatever, but you know, as I thought about it long and hard, I was thinking maybe it's also something historical, because when you think of those ancient societies in Africa, you know, first of all, matriarchy was very important, but the man, I guess, role was to really protect. And I guess you feel like, you know, you've been put into enslavement and your whole, like, you gain your land taken away from you, and you see maybe sometimes for some slaves, like, rape happening to the ones you love and killings and stuff. Like, you feel powerless as a man, but especially as an African man in those ancient societies where you had to be the protector. And so I guess now it becomes the other thing where it's like, I fell, and there's this feeling, I guess, of I don't know if it's true. I don't know. I'm just thinking, you know, maybe of it, like, and we don't even realize it, but maybe like a guilt of I fell for my community, I fell for my people, right? I fell for my black kids, I fell for my black wife, I fell for my black whatever, and so it's like, now I gotta be stronger, and I don't have to show. And it's something that even passes through us, I guess, with the genes,
DNA,
you know?
And all things. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And some fears as well, some stuff, you know, like some, you know, like reflects we have. Like, it's, I believe. And the thing about this modern society right now, the luck I have, let me tell you, is that my mom is from French Guiana, and slavery in French Guiana wasn't as hard as in Guadeloupe, because Guadeloupe in the Caribbean, there was a lot of things to produce out of it, you know, cotton, sugarcane, a lot of things, you know. Mm-hmm. and so in French Guiana, you know, it's in Amazonia, right? So it's more complicated, you know, with all the wild animals, and there was nothing really to do right here. So they brought the slave here, but they didn't do a lot of things, you know, which is, you know, funny, I mean, not funny, but when you compare to the country next door, which is Suriname, slavery in Suriname was terrible. You know, like the Dutch, they were crazy. They were very crazy. They were the harshest, you know? So my mom didn't grow up in this mentality where, like, and you know, in it's a very specific thing, but, you know, I'm just going to continue and talk about it. but in French Guyana, there's, like, in before, like, all ages, there were, like, this prison where they would send white people, you know? Like, when you would do a crime in France, they would send you to French Guyana, and you'd be in this big-ass prison, you know, that we call Le Bagne, right? So, basically, you think of a land where slavery wasn't as active, then you had this prison where you would see white people under you in the hierarchy of society.
Yes.
And then you would also, there was like this congregation of Catholic church ladies who would buy slaves to free them, you know? So there was a lot of free slaves, I mean, free black men in French Guyana, right? So my mom raised me in a way where as a man, I can cry, I can express feelings. And I knew that people in French Guyana, we don't have the same mentality. But what I see in the Caribbean, where slavery was, you know, hardcore going, basically, I see the mentality is different. My dad is like, boys don't cry. You know, like, hey, what you talking about? You depressed, what the? And you know, but he, I guess he progressed because not long ago, you know, I remember my grandfather passed away, and you know, he's doing everything he can to make sure I'm right, because he knows I'm a little bit of an emotional mess sometimes. And so he's calling and asking me how I am and telling me, you know, and it's rare, you know. I never heard my father tell me that he loves me, but I know he does. That's one thing, you know, and the fact that he's now taking care of, like, calling me, and I know that he understands now that depression, sadness and stuff, it's important, you know, to take care of your kid for that. And so, you know, I appreciate that. And the thing about our modern society right now is that in the black community, the people who are mainly active when it comes to the struggle, the fight, you know, that it's women, you know, it's black feminism. It's beautiful, more, actually. But on the side, you got men who go through things, and you know, all this social pressure also, you know, of being a real man, you gotta be a real man, and like, you cannot let anybody talk to you any kind of crazy way. You know what, if you're a white man, you can just let someone tell you some shit and you'll be like, pfft. You know, but if you're black, oh my god, you let someone,
you have to always, you
know,
yeah, fight,
exactly,
fight,
you
fight,
know, yeah. And so violence and stuff, and at the same time, you know, like, sometimes I do believe that with social issues, we do tend to observe what's happening and criticize, I mean, point fingers at the people who commit things, rather than observe the general structure and system that puts these people in those situations where they would do things, right?
Exactly.
So the issue also, sometimes, and I'm not trying to generalize, with black feminism is that they, not only do they not think about black men, which is totally right because they have to think about their own issues first,
yes,
but also, you know, sometimes in the rhetoric, it's like, the black man is like the reason of all the issues within the black community. And although everything can be agreeable, but it's like, let's just think of the reason why sometimes black men act a certain
black
way.
Black men act the way, yes. And I think that especially in a black women community, we tend to talk a lot about black men, but we do not take the time enough, not all, but yeah. Mm-hmm. To talk to them, actually, you know, so that we can get out, and that's how we have to start that.
Exactly. So at some point, I was realizing that some of my black brothers, best friends, just neighbors or whatever in Guadeloupe, who didn't have the same like upbringing as me, you know, like their mothers wouldn't tell them the same things, and sometimes also it's funny because sometimes like mothers raise kids and sometimes by themselves, mostly like in black communities.
Yes.
And I could remember hearing some of the moms saying to their child that boys don't cry. You know what I mean? And so that's the irony.
Or don't act like a girl or something.
Don't act like a girl. Exactly. Yeah. You know, the irony. And so I started to feel like even some of the stuff that was happening to me, you know, because I, you know, when I was young, I was getting bullied, you know, for being emotional, for being like a normal human being, you know, because it's like, And you know, as I grew, and I was shy, so I was not talking a lot. I was listening and observing a
what?
Lot, which
Dude?
Gave me. People don't believe that when I tell them that, but it's true. It's almost like I was in learning session for years. Like I was observing people. I mean, I was very talkative and very expressive in my private environment with my mom, my family. I used to.
Yeah,
safe. Yeah, I've always been like an entertainer. I was doing jokes. When I was 4 years old, apparently I had this famous comedic act that I was doing because I was imitating the lady at lunch. And I've always been an entertainer. But when I was in like not my private family, like my cocoon, I would turn into plain mode. And then I guess it was my learning time where I was observing people a lot. And listening a lot because I was learning a lot about people in general. And then when I analyzed it, I wasn't afraid or I wasn't like mad at the people who been not so nice to me. I was thinking to myself, I understand what they're coming from, even if themselves they don't see it, you know, like they don't see that they're mad at me or mean with me because of this and that. And sometimes, like, I guess a little bit of envy to be free as I was, you know?
Yes.
And so I decided, contrary to some people who humanly would criticize and point fingers at the person who done stuff, to observe the general system and be like, all right, so maybe the only thing I can do is be open about it, like accept that some people are different than me and be an example for others, I guess. So I was thinking,
own it. Yeah.
Like, never. I would never change my difference, my unicity to comply to, you know, a general like society generally get to love me for who I am and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody applauded, and I was like, wow. It was almost like an encouragement for me to keep pushing on my difference and inspire others like this, you know.
Yes.
And I believe that's the best thing I can do for Black men. And somehow, no joke, that's also one of the reasons why I really hope and pray that this music thing is going to work for me, because I want to be that image for Black boys around the world who might feel alone, lonely, separated for their own community sometimes because they are creative, they are, you know, like artistic, they are, you know, intellectual, they like things that are different, they are emotional, they are all this. And they don't have no one that looks like them up here, you know, that they can look up to. I want to be that.
Like weird ones.
Yeah. The weird ones, exactly. Or the white ones sometimes, because we were.
Yeah, because, yeah, know. People would say, oh, you act white.
You act white. You know? So, yeah, I hope to be that. And, you know,
yeah, we pray with you. I'm just talking for everybody now, because if they're listening, they got to pray.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
It's okay. We have reached like almost an hour. I'm so, oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna be doing sessions with you like every week. Like, oh, what you gotta say?
Well, you know what? I'd love to come back. I would love to come back whenever
you want.
Yes,
of course.
We can talk. And I also, you know, whenever you can come to Paris, of course, you're invited to my place. And as I told you, we're gonna do a podcast together, or three or two or four. We'll see.
Hey, well, I'm definitely gonna come. Like, now I know where to go when I'm in Paris.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time and that you were on here and expressed all of those things. Thank you.
Thank you for your vibe, your energy. I appreciate it. Since the first day we met, I really appreciate everything you provide in this universe. And to everyone who's listening, thank you for listening. And I wanted to say to them, love yourself.
Be yourself. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I would love you to share your like page or where people can find what you're doing again, because or your podcast. So
mm-hmm.
they might.
Well, pick. So I have three places you can find me mostly. First of all, my Instagram. It's YK_ET. Okay. YKET. Then you can find my website at yarden.fr. It's a French website, so FR. Okay, Yarden. YARDEN.FR. And you can also find my SoundCloud. Everything is on my Instagram and website. This podcast is going to come out the same day as mine. You know, you'll find my podcast. Voila. Voila. There you go.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you stick with me till the end and you enjoyed every piece of this episode with the wonderful Yarden. And I hope to hear you all in the next episode. Peace, love, and shea butter. Don't forget, you get the pussy, you get the power. Love and be yourself.